श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री ब्रजनाथ हलदार की जय, नृसिंह भगवान की जय, तिरुपाप महोत्सव तिथि श्री अभिराम ठाकुर की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल। सो प्रणाम, गुड मॉर्निंग all of you here, all of you connected here online. So today and tomorrow we will be having a double session per day. We will have one afternoon class and morning class, morning Q&A. So today we are having the first Q&A and tomorrow we will have a second one. And in the afternoons we will be mostly sharing Brahma Stuti, the prayers of Sri Brahmaji. So that said, since today we have Q&A, I don't know if you have any questions or topics or things you may like to hear about, whether physically present already we have something here, and if anyone has something online, you can also share that in the thread, and eventually we can address it. So, Indranuja Prabhu.
I'm reading your group right now, and I was reading, and I'm trying to remember, what's that expression that it's not
teleological,
the soul's inherent, it's just
teleological inherence?
Yeah, teleological. And I kind of got it, but I felt like I needed a little more understanding of that, because I think I understand what it is, but maybe you could address that.
Mm-hmm.
And also in the wider picture, because I truly understand why Bhakti isn't heard. I do understand that. But that particular aspect, I could see how that might lead towards some kind of idea, not of inherency exactly, but more of a, you know, a trajectory, shall we say, that this that the jiva could be, just by its nature, by being Shakti, could have that trajectory. So maybe
Okay, so just in case it was not fully heard for the ones connected, the question, make the gist of the question of why Indranuja Prabhu has to do with the idea of teleology or teleological inherence in this particular case, and he would like to some further elaboration on the concept, so we will share some words. I've done that in my book to some degree. Also there has been some series of articles I've written that were published in The Harmonist, and in the book there is a summary of that. So the idea of teleological inherence, or the idea of teleological, something is teleological when it's mostly like connected to something in terms of the purpose that serves, no, or rather than the cause from which that arises. So basically it's more connected to the ultimate purpose one is destined to attain sometimes. I mean, in connection to this topic, this has been, I mean, I'm not promoting that idea in the book. But I'm explaining what's the idea for those who promote it, who is a way of trying to, of course, and a valid way, and I appreciate the intention there, of trying to harmonize, for example, why contemporary acharyas like Thakur Bhakti and others at times seem to be promoting inherence of bhakti, while at times it may be sound that they are promoting something else. So how to put all the things together? So there has been different instances. Some of them, of course, no, we don't have inherent bhakti in any single way, but we have the potential for bhakti. That's my main point in my book. Some others will say, well, we have bhakti's inherent in us, teleologically speaking, like implying we are ultimately made for that.
Right.
You know, in our constitution, we are made for bhakti. So in that sense, it's inherent. It's not like physically inherent in us, if you will, but we are destined to attain that.
Is that the same as potential?
Like the Sakya says, this is the same as potential. I wouldn't say that. In my book, I tried to argue to that effect, because potential means we have the potential to attain bhakti, but we may choose not to do so, and attain a situation that will be our ultimate destiny, nonetheless. Now, like for example, and that made my points there in the book. For example, someone may attain, because the idea here is we are already our ultimate. Function will be exhibited in connection to bhakti, so in that sense we are in bhakti is inherent teleologically speaking, like in a way saying we are destined to ultimately attain that. But the point is that we see in Shastra that there are personalities who do not attain bhakti and remain in eternity there. Oh, like you attain Brahma Sayuja, which is a situation that bhakti is not operative, but you remain there for eternity, or you can attain even Santa Rasa, which is not Prem. The main argument in connection to teleological inheritance goes even in terms of Prem, even not even only of Bhakti, but Prem is teleological inherent. But we find that our Goswamis mentioned that you can attain even Vaikuntha and not have Prem. You can attain Bhava, interestingly. Because one of the main attributes of Prem is Mamata, or possessiveness towards Krishna. And if you attain Santarasa, there is no possessiveness. Actually, Rupa Goswami defines Santarasa as nirmamata, without possessiveness. So the point is, you can attain a position in eternity, whether in Brahma Sayuja or in Vaikuntha, and not have Prem. So how does, if Prem is somehow teleological inherent and we are destined ultimately to go there, how can we explain that about these positions in eternity would Prem is not attained, and you remain in eternity nonetheless. So, following that logic, I'll try to argue for the non-possibility, how bhakti is not inherent, even teleologically. And one more point is, in the implications of bhakti being teleological inherent, is this idea that we are already somehow predestined to attain a particular type of bhakti.
Right.
Which I try to mention that in my book, that that's not necessarily, that's not a fact.
No, logical.
But we have a will to choose which form of bhakti to embrace of those that come to our life. And also, if we will say that every jiva is already predestined or predestined to attain a particular type of bhakti, how does apply to the indiscriminate campaign of Gaur Nityananda, who over and over again we read in Shastra, they are giving this to anyone and everyone without discrimination, without consideration. So, do follow my point. That will make the campaign of Gaur, and especially Nityananda, more like elitist. Not like we come to give this type of bhakti, because Mahaprabhu, Gaur Lila, comes to mainly give a very specific type of bhakti. I mean,
right.
So the point is, if bhakti is teleological inherent and only some jivas are predestined to attain certain bhakti, it means that Mahaprabhu Nityananda only come to give this gift to those who are already predestined to attain that, not to anyone and everyone. And that will make their campaign some form of elitism instead of some indiscriminate shower of mercy, which is how it has been described in Shastra. No? So, considering all these different possibilities or notion is that I try to although I appreciate the idea, the intention behind the idea of trying to make sense about how, why some acharyas may have say inherent, non-inherent, and they refer to this idea of teleological inherence, that also presents some problems, as I'm trying to say, present here and present in my book. So some thoughts in connection to...
Thank you.
To the teleological.
So the idea that what they say is that we have to attain Prem, not Bhava or even some other form of bhakti, but they're saying specifically Prem, that's what.
Who, sorry?
You know, when people talk about inherent bhakti, they talk about inherent Prem.
Yeah, generally, there are different, there is an interesting variety of scenarios, but mostly I've heard that those who consider bhakti inherent, they will speak that Prem is also inherent. Although I've heard a few sayings, no, maybe bhakti is inherent, but prema is not inherent. Also, I heard some say prema is inherent, but bhakti is not inherent. But when I tried to ask him, please explain that to me, because it's not just, well, maybe this is as like this and this is like that. That's not how you establish Siddhanta, like just saying maybe and trying to think about, imagine some possibility, but what Shastra is saying and where that idea is found, and of course.
But I think if we kind of take like the statements of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what does Bhaktivinoda Thakur say on that subject of inherency?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you. Because I haven't read all these books, but I've read Jagadharma and a few others, and I didn't read anything in there about.
As I mentioned in my book, in the chapter 8, I think.
Yeah, I haven't got there yet.
Okay, you have to. But mostly we find different statements, no? Statements that seem that he's promoting bhakti's inherency, gotcha. But also statements that are very clear, saying we receive from the sadhu that particular bhakti that he or she has, and that becomes our own affinity, so very, very clearly. So, again, on the basis of that, I try to harmonize as much as possible. And of course, my conclusion is, again, we don't have inherent bhakti nor physically, nor theologically, or nor teleological. There are different ways of speaking about inherence. But we have inherent potential for bhakti, which again, for some may sound, that's too of a very subtle difference. But it's clear, it's important for me to make these differences clear, because if we do not make that distinction, as I have tried to present now, there are some problems with, for example, the idea of teleological inherence or some other ideas.
Right.
While the idea of inherent potential is what basically Shastra is mentioning, no? That yesterday I was speaking with one friend of mine, and he was telling me, because we were saying, well, for some devotees this is difficult to grasp, and for some it has been a topic that they have been ruminating on for years. And he told me, for me, I solved that in 2 minutes, he told me. You know? Like when I read, okay, there are 3 Shaktis, Swarup Shakti, Maya Shakti, and Tatastha Shakti, and each one belongs to a different category, so each one is not inherent in the other, basically. Mm-hmm. You know? As you have Maya Shakti, Tatastha Shakti is not inherent in Maya Shakti, Swarup Shakti is not inherent in Maya Shakti, you have Tatastha Shakti, Maya Shakti is not inherent in Tatastha Shakti, Swarup Shakti is not inherent in Tathasta Shakti.
Yeah,
and you have Swarup Shakti, Maya Shakti is not inherent in Swarup Shakti, and Tathasta Shakti is not inherent in Swarup Shakti. So there are 3 different categories. And Bhakti is the essence of the Swarup Shakti, so it belongs to that particular department, which is not the same as Tathasta Shakti. But again, considering what does it mean Tathasta, which has to do with being nourished by the environment, having potential to be influenced by an environment, and especially by Swarup Shakti, then we can conclude, okay, we don't have inherent Swarup Shakti, we don't have inherent Bhakti, but we are constituted, made in such a way that we have the potential to embrace Swarup Shakti to a point that it becomes, we do not become Swarup Shakti, we still remain Tathasta Shakti forever, but Swarup Shakti becomes a very
complementary
aspect of our identity. The very term used by Jiva Goswami is tadatmya. Tadatmya means, he doesn't use the term like ekabhyata, like we become one with Swarup Shakti, but becomes tadatmya, which means we attain similarity. We become Swarup Shakti like, and the famous example is that of the iron rod put in the fire. So iron rod remains iron rod, always, but becomes fire-like while remaining in the proximity of the fire. So we are like the iron rod. We enter the fire of Swarup Shakti, we become Swarup Shakti-like. And of course, there is a point of that we will remain forever in that environment. There is no fall from Goloka.
So that's
Tadatmya. Tadatmya means like likeness, similarity. We become like that. Not strictly we become that. Mm-hmm. It's not that we stop being Tathasta Shakti and pass to another category. We remain Tathasta Shakti, but fully engrossed, embraced by the influence of the Swarup Shakti to the point that our eternal identity becomes defined by that influence of Swarup Shakti. No?
So just like when we're in the material world, we're Nityabhadas, so when we attain that, could you say we're nicchasiddha at that point?
When we attain what?
That environment, you know, the Swarup Shakti.
No, we are not nicchasiddha. We become sadhana siddha.
Right.
Yeah, nitya siddha means someone who has always been siddha, who has always been under that influence of Swarup Shakti, technically speaking.
But technically we were nitya bada.
Yeah. Although the word nitya in this case shouldn't be, I mean, it's a way of saying, technically speaking, we are anadi bada, which means conditioned without the beginning, because the word nitya implies the suggestion there's no beginning nor end. So if we are nitya bada, there's no hope. And there will be similar to what someone in Madhva Sampradaya or Balab Sampradaya will think there are some jivas destined for eternal damnation, which is not our philosophy. So, technically speaking, it's nitya. Anadi bada. So, without beginning, there is conditioning, but there is possibility of ending the conditioning. So, one becomes siddha. But siddha out of practice, generally, sadhana siddha or kripa siddha, Krishna may bestow some extraordinary mercy like he did with Putana. So we may, but as we always say, we are not projecting ourselves to obtain kripa siddhi, because that's like living your life without working expecting to win the lottery. No, I won't work because someday I may win the lottery. Probably you won't. So better you get a job, and if you win the lottery, that's like a plus. I mean, we shouldn't be playing lottery, that's another thing. So kripa siddhi is Krishna just whimsically bestowed full perfection to someone without any reason. But generally, siddhi is attained through sadhana, which involves a lot of kripa, lots of mercy, but there is practice also involved. So, nitya siddha are those who are always there, who have been always there. No? And that's the very idea of the verse, nitya siddha Krishna prem, sadhya kavunai, shravanai, siddha chit karayodai, that many times is quoted to prove that Krishna prem is inherent. But actually, that verse is not speaking about nitya Krishna prem being inherent in every jiva, but nitya siddha Krishna prem being inherent in the nitya siddhas. Because nitya siddha means eternally existent, eternally perfect. So the idea is Krishna prem is something which is eternally existent in those who are eternally perfect, and that they are called the nitya siddhas. So yeah, Nanda, Yashoda, Manu, Mangal, Lalita, Vishaka, they have inherent bhakti. Because they are made of bhakti. They are not tatastha shakti. They are swarup shakti, nitya parishats. They are eternal associate composed of swarup shakti. They are not made of, they are another category. They are not tatastha shakti jivas. So for us, nitya siddha Krishna prem means the way we attain prem is that Baba will descend in our hearts from those eternal associates who are made of prem. That's how is explained the idea of sadhana bhakti taking us to bhava. And this verse is a definition of sadhana bhakti. Rupa Goswami says, has the original verse, kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhava sasadana vidha nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam hridi sadhyata. He says when one engages one's senses in the culture of bhakti, eventually the heart and the senses and the body, everything is like purified by bhakti, and the ground is ready for nitya siddhasya bhavasya, for that bhava which is eternally existent in the nitya siddhas, to one ray of that descends upon the heart of the sadhaka. In the context of one's practice, no? Raga noga bhakti means I'm eventually expecting to serve eternally in the wake of the mood of some of the eternal brajavasis, the ragatmikas, those who are made of raga. Raga noga means to follow ragatmikas, the ones who, eternal role models. So, when one reaches that point of one practice trying to follow in those footsteps, a ray of the bhav that those ragatmikas have descends upon our heart, and that makes for our spiritual identity, basically. You know? That's how it works. It's not, again, that we have the eternal bhav, we have the eternal prem, and it awakens, but they have eternal bhav of prem, and that prem, which they are made of, descends into our hearts where our heart is ready through sadhana to receive such a descent,
right,
if you will.
You have to serve that person in order to get the ray, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It isn't like just some random thing.
Yeah, yeah, of course, for that to happen, we have had to be engaged in sadhana for a long time, and engaged in sadhana means eventually to have a focus in our sadhana, to have a longing and an aspiration to serve in the in the mood of that particular eternal associate who eventually will extend his, her mercy to us in the form of that particular ray of that bhav that we attain to. We this, cherish to attain and serve eternally. Yeah.
So this is different from Guru. This is the Raghatmikas of, you know, so we have to have Guru Bhakti in order to kind of practice.
But yeah, then yeah, of course.
I separate this idea of the meditation on the Raghatmikas.
Mm-hmm.
It's a separate idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say that in connection to Guru Bhakti, it begins with Guru Bhakti. I mean, it, and by proper Guru Bhakti, of course, naturally, the general rule, for there may be exceptions to the rule, but the general rule is Gurudev has some particular affinity, and one will be inclined in that direction by receiving those bhakti samskars. Unless there are exceptions to the rule, unless one has had previous lifetimes of practice under other influences, and it can happen, like Srila Prabhupada had affinity for Sakya Bhava, but his guru had affinity for Manjari Bhava.
Right.
So there is place for those things. You know, Shyamananda Prabhu and Hridaya Chaitanya. I mean, there may be more exception than rules, but there is place, and that shouldn't be a problem, basically. No? So yeah, eventually one receives that affinity. Let's say one's guru has affinity for Sakya Bhava, generally, the disciple will have that, will inherit that affinity, if you will. But eventually, of course, that affinity will be, I mean, the affinity for Sakya Bhava is not towards the guru. No? I mean, one is not,
right.
The guru is not the object of Sakya Bhakti, but it's Krishna. So gradually, with the guidance of the guru, and by focusing on the guru in Dasya, as a servant, as a disciple, no? As we know, no? The Dasya in Gaurlila, and Gaurlila implies also the Dasya to guru. No? The concept of Sadaka, Deha, takes us into the Sakya or Madhurya in the Braja Lila. And yeah, that will be another aspect of our life of service, basically. No? And again, Gaur Lila is not only the gateway, the pearly gates to Krishna Lila, but also a destination unto itself. So Guru Bhakti, my point is, it's not just a means to an end, but will there be there for eternity. To say that in Nityanavadvip, we will be living eternally in the ashram of our Gurudev and serving him forever. So the point is, Guru Bhakti is there forever. And also, Srila Jiva Goswami makes this interesting point in Bhakti Sandarbha. He mentions that that some people like to see Guru Bhakti as an anga of Krishna Bhakti. No? Krishna Bhakti is the angi, or the main body, if you will. And one aspect of that body, one limb, is Guru Bhakti. So I serve my guru as an aspect of my service to Krishna. But he said, but others like to see Krishna Bhakti as an anga to Guru Bhakti, to the angi of Guru Bhakti. And he says, and this is more pleasing to Krishna. He's not saying this is the only way, but he's just presenting different approaches and gradations. And of course, Guru Bhakti is, by extension, you could say, served by Vaishnava Seva, or sometimes it's called Tadiya Seva. And this is arguably emphasized by our Goswamis as the highest thing, not even service to Krishna, but high service to the servants of Krishna. And actually, that's our prospect in eternity. Even.
Right.
We don't project, I will serve Krishna directly, whether in Sakya Bhav, whether in any Bhav. I mean, there is always this idea of the group leader, of the role model, of the through which my service will reach Krishna, no? In whatever camp you will be. So that's a notion also of this Tadiya Seva, and it's famous.
Well, there's also the famous verse, Acharya Mama Janayama.
Mm-hmm.
In the Elephant Capital, Krishna says, you know,
I am the Guru.
I am the Guru, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so it's like what he's basically indicating there, that worship of the Guru is the highest thing.
Yeah. And there are many, yeah. If we go into the Shastra and many statements here over and over again, Krishna himself is emphasizing, this is the thing that pleases me the most, basically. You know, service to the Guru, which means service to bhakti, you know, service to to bhakta, service to bhakti. That's Krishna himself would say, I'm engaged in that.
That's the only thing
he's doing, basically. That's his only business, if you will, no? to reciprocate with every one of his bhaktas. No? So,
thank you.
Interesting questions and points. So, anything else? Any other question from the ones online as well? We have some time. We may not extend today ourselves like the last Q&A, but still we have some time.
I have another. Well, I don't want to hold it.
No. I'll let you know.
I was just wondering about Nityananda and Vrindavan, not Vrindavan, Jiva Goswami. That was Jiva.
Sorry, again? Who
Nityananda,
were?
Nityananda, Prabhu, and Jiva Goswami.
Uh-huh.
Jiva Goswami worshipped Krishna Balaram, and it seems like Nityananda Prabhu had a big influence in his life.
Mm-hmm.
But he was in Manjari Bhavs, but he was worshipping Krishna and Balaram. I just, mm-hmm. That's something that I've often been curious about. How did that work?
Mm. I mean, well, of course, we do not have that much information about the life of Jiva Goswami. I mean, of any of the Goswamis. We have some information more than from some than others. For example, in Chaitanya Charitamrita and so on, we hear some things about Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami,
right.
Raghunath Das Goswami. But about Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, some of them we need less information. So Srila Jiva Goswami, of course, there is some information. And one part of that information is that he was worshipping Krishna Balaram in his childhood.
Right.
No? I mean, I'm not downplaying that. I'm just mentioning it's not that
that
during all his life his ishtadev was Krishna Balaram. He was only, because again, we know he's Bilas Manjari, so his
right.
affinities, ultimate affinity, ultimate identity, we accept the Goswamis as Nitya Siddhas. So they have always been there, being who they are in Vrindavan, if you will. No? So my point is why Srila Jiva Goswami was worshipping Krishna Balaram. And of course, as Guru Maharaj mentions, of all the Goswamis, the one who has shown a much stronger affinity towards the Sakya camp, if you will, is Srila Jiva Goswami. So it's not just that, how to say, it's not just that, okay, that was the family deity in their house. Krishna Balaram, he happened to worship that, and then he had no further like emotional connection with it. It was more like a form. No, we do not see that. We see that he expressed some affinity in time towards Krishna Balaram when he writes, I don't know, Gopal Champu and so on. It's clear that, of course, this doesn't mean he's in Sakya Rasa, because I'm saying this because sometimes devotees may say this type of thing, like, well, you can be Sakya Rasa, Madhura Rasa, and have an identity everywhere. Like they sometimes have said about Srila Prabhupada, no, he can be also in Manjari Bhav, he can be a Manjari, he can be a Sakya, and that's not so. It's not like that. No, it's not like you press this, the Achintya button, Achintya. Now, everything and anything and the pure devotee can. Ramananda Roy was described as having so many identities. So anybody can be whatever they like. It's not that easy. No, it's not as that. No, because we can very cheaply engage in like rasa bhas and this type of improper mixtures of mellows and moods. So Srila Jiva Goswami has an affinity towards, not an affinity, he's made of Manjari Bhav, if you will, Ragatmika. But he has worshipped Krishna Balaram in his childhood, he has shown affinity for that. So my point is, why not?
Why not?
I'm not saying that you are against the idea, nothing, but my point is, there is place for that. It's not that, oh, he's a Manjari eternally, so he cannot show any affinity whatsoever but to Manjari Bhav, because if not, whatever, his rasa is compromised or something. No, nothing like that. So that's an important, and I like that example, because that shows what we were saying the other day. There's place for for having one sthayi bhav, one fixed emotional disposition in transcendence, and there is place to having some affinity on some degree, not to the point of replacing the sthayi bhav, but special affinity in other direction which is not compromising one's sthayi bhav. And that helps us to navigate these waters of, as we say, the idea of racism. No? When in the name of rasa we end up being racist. No? So to be racist in the name of rasa is racism. No? Thinking only this rasa, this is the only thing, and when you have that affinity, I've heard sometimes even people like offending other rasas, no? For the sake of how much we hanker for this only unique higher thing. And that's, I mean, when expressing your affinity, you have to be very expert in doing so in such a way that all the other affinities are properly honored as well. No? Especially if you are, what to speak, in front of people who have those affinities. No? One should be very... We learned this from the very first book of our Gaudiya Sampradaya, which is the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. No? When you see this journey of Gopa Kumar, and he's visiting so many places, but he has his affinity that he received from his own guru, no? Which is Sakya, right. Prem Priyanarma Sakya, towards Madan Gopal. But he's going through so many other affinities, places corresponding with affinities, no? Different planetary systems and so on, as you know. And he never offended, no? Those affinities, but he could not also check his own affinity. That was for me, that's a very important idea that it's there in the very first book of the Sampradaya, like trying to set the stage. This is our Sampradaya is about this. And it's interesting, for many reasons, Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a great book. Because it's clearly established, yes, the highest reach of the Sampradaya is in terms of Madhurya Bhav, that's clear. Although the main character is in Sakya Prem, they clearly establish this is the highest reach. But also by having the main character in Sakya Prem, they are mentioning there's place for this as well. And on top of that, they are establishing there's even place for any other mellows or moods in different cases, and for one to respect all those things. So all the things are simultaneously attained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita to establish this is the highest reach, there's also place in our Sampradaya for Sakya Prem, and there should be place for honoring and respecting any other mood, even of different sampradayas. Mm-hmm. Ram Bhakti, Vaikuntha Bhakti, mm-hmm. Vatsalya Prem, whatever, anything. Mm-hmm. I always remember this section that I always quote in so many, I have said that more than 108 times in my classes. When Gopa Kumar is in Ayodhya and he meets Hanuman, and he doesn't tell Hanuman, "Hey Hanuman, you are a Ram Bhakta, you are an inferior class." No, you have to hear about the glories of Mahistadev, Madan Gopal in Vrindavan. That's the real deal. He's not saying that. He's telling Hanuman, please sing the glories of your Prabhu, of your master. No? And Hanuman starts to do Ram Kirtan. And Gopa Kumar is hearing that, and by hearing that, his faith in Krishna is nourished. His faith in his own Istadev is nourished by hearing, by witnessing the faith of someone else in some other Istadev. Of course, the other Istadev is the same person in a different form. No? So they have this clear. There is non-dualism here. We are speaking of the same absolute truth, but expressing in different Baba terms. So that should be the ideal. I witness the faith of others, and that nourishes the faith, my faith in my own Istadev. It's not that I'm disturbed, they are against me, some dichotomy is there. That means you are still Kanista and you are unable to harmonize. And it's okay, there is place for that, and you should be maybe guarded or protected from exposing yourself to that diversity because you are not yet able to deal with that. Not because the other people is wrong or bad, but because you are not yet mature enough. And one should be sincere to recognize that, but in time one should be able not only to give place for that, not only to tolerate that, but even to be nourished by that in one's own ideal. So that's the point. No? So Hanuman started to glorify. Gopa Kumar concluded by hearing Ram's Hanuman's glorification of Ram. Gopa Kumar concluded, "Jai Madan Gopal." And then Hanuman told Gopa Kumar, please tell the glories of your Madan Gopal, your Ishtadev. And Gopa Kumar started to glorify Madan Gopal, Hanumanji ended saying Jai Sri Ram. So you follow. Both understood. We are speaking about the same person but each one has their own perspective, and we are nourishing each other through that diversity. And that's the same with the guru. You know? As we say the other day, sometimes it's very unbecoming that devotees meet each other and the first thing they have to ask is, who is your guru? And depending which is your answer to my question, the dialogue continues or not. So I'm totally labeling you according to who is your guru, and generally it has to do with which mission that he or she belongs to, which institution, and I'm showing I do not care for who you are as a person. Just tell me to which affiliation do you have institutionally speaking, and that will tell about who you are. And that's like, oh my God, that's not very deep. And of course, one should be very sober about speaking and asking about others' guru. Sanatana Goswami say, Gopayet Guru Radmana, Gopayet Ishtadevatam, Gopayet Nijamantram, Gopayet Nijamalikam. He say one should hide one's guru, one should hide one's Ishtadev, one should hide one's Malika, and one should hide one's mantra. Which of course, you don't have to take that literally and kidnap your guru and put him in a closet. But hide in the sense of not exposing those secret things in your life, those valuable treasures in a very cheap way, and trying just to impose that on others and so on. So one should be very discreet, you say, in asking about that and speaking about that. So generally it's not the first thing I do when I met someone, who's your guru. But if eventually in the dialogue that happens to come, again, I won't tell that person, hey, hear about my Gurudev, the qualities of my Gurudev, and be inspired with that. No, I will ask that person, please sing the glories of your Guru Maharaj, and so I will be nourishing my faith in my Guru Maharaj. No? Because Guru is one. Guru Tattva is one. Of course, it expresses itself in a diversity of persons, of individuals, Vyasti Guru, but Samasti, the conglomerate, the universal Guru Tattva principle is one. It's non-dual. So, by hearing about the glories of one representative of that one department, naturally, if that's done properly, my own faith in my Gurudev will be nourished. So, that's the way we should learn to deal with each other and become Vaishnavas, ladies and gentlemen, basically.
it's an intimate question if you were to ask someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we are asking about the most intimate thing, most valuable thing. So that's not something that should be exposed in a very easy way, for the sake of who knows what. This is my guru, so I'm very special because this is my guru. Who knows? So many ways of misrepresenting. Yeah, the value of one's connection with one's guru. So yeah, generally these things are just very, very delicate, very subtle. So we should honor those truths properly. All this, maybe we went to different topics, but this was in connection to Srila Jiva Goswami's worship of Krishna Balaram. No? But there is place for that to happen. No? I'm reminded of There was one associate, and there is one associate of Sri Chaitanya Dev called Gadadhar Das Goswami. Not Gadadhar Pandit.
Right.
Gadadhar Das Goswami. Who is considered to be in Madhurya Bhav. He's considered in connection to the, like an expansion and manifestation of Srimati Radharani's complexion and many other things. But the point is that he's in Madhurya Bhav. No? But interestingly, in the dynamics of Gaur Lila, he, as a member of Gaur Lila, mostly was associating with devotees in Sakya Rasa. So again, it's a similar thing. You could say, oh, he has Madhurya Bhav in Braj, but he's hanging out mostly with Sakyarati Upasakas or with worshippers in Sakyabhava. And again, it's not that that's negatively affecting his Madhurya Bhava or something. No? So there is place for, I mean, a devotee can be in Madhurya Bhava, and there are of course so many varieties of that, or Manjari Bhava, and there are different like shades of that. It's not like being in Manjari Bhava means only one thing. No? There are so many, again, we are Tathastas, or there are so many influences that come to our life, and mostly can be one particular current, if you will, but there may be other currents also, like giving nuance to our particular final identity as a Sakha or a Manjari or whatever. So each case will be different, no? And even that will play out in eternity. No? You can be a Manjari of Sri Radha, but if you have had some considerable influence of Sakya Rasa for whatever reason in your life, that also will play out in eternity in the form of you may be, your eternal service as a Manjari will have to do quite a lot more than other Manjaris maybe in interacting with Priyanarma Sakas in the context of whatever, delivering messages and making arrangements for the daily meeting of Radha and Krishna. So, and in case of other Manjaris, that degree of interaction may be more reduced. Again, there's place for all the things. It's not just one size fits all and this is the only possible model for being a Manjari, for being a Sakha, but depending on the different influences that we receive as Sarakas, that will also have their corresponding expression as Siddhas, no? In the realm of perfection. So,
well, Subhava is very heavily involved in Madhurya, you know, to Krishna, Krishna, so it's not like the Sakyas don't have any, you know, the Priyanama Sakyas are heavily involved.
Yeah.
One way or another.
Oh yeah. But also inside in that group there may be also degrees of involvement, if you will, no?
Right.
According to again specific influences that each one has received. No? There's diversity. The point is that life is diverse, no? I mean there's not just like this model, this is this. It's not boring like that. It's really as they say, how do they say, like variety is the spice of life.
Is the spice,
no?
Of life, yes.
So that's the ultimate life we want to attain, and the more spicy one, not because too much chili, but just there's a lot of flavor, lots of rasa, if you will. So that means lots of variety. Of course, there's a grounding of unity and absolute non-dual consciousness at Vaigyan Tattva, but on that foundation, I mean, how much variety is in our particular perspective of you, the spiritual world. I mean, you don't find that level of variety in any other spiritual school. No? Mm. They will speak in terms of non-dualism and Brahman and non-variety, or Nirvana and Buddhism, or and even in monotheism, there's not too much, I don't know, Christianity, that much clear picture of what's going on there. And maybe some elements, but not to the degree of variety and detail. As I think I told you the other day, when we were in North Carolina, we were speaking with the devotees after breakfast one day, and someone mentioned this idea of fishing. Fishing in the context, not of fishing with fishes, but sometimes this is applied to catching people, right? In some, whatever context, I don't remember which was the context.
Jesus said that. He was a fisher of men. Jesus said that.
Okay.
You know, so maybe that's...
But then someone say, well, did you know that Krishna does fishing in Golok Vrindavan? No? And they mentioned he's fishing, but the fishes are not being heard by the, how is it, the hook? No, the...
Right.
Yeah.
No? So my point was, I was laughing just by thinking, I mean, you will never hear that degree of detail in the description of what's going on there. No, like, God's fishing, but the fish are not heard by the hook. I mean... So that's too much, lots of diversity. That's my point, no? Variety and detail. So so the point is that we have to accustom ourselves as sadhakas to deal with that degree of variety, although we may not be there yet, but to engage in our sadhana in such a way that we are allowing that to happen more and more in our life. Because if we become narrow-minded, sectarian, racist, and who knows what, we won't go there.
No.
We will go somewhere else, but we won't enter that particular window that our sampradaya is offering, because we are not choosing that. We are not, our idea and conception is not corresponding with what's actually going on there. Mm-hmm. So we may be convinced I'm going there. Who knows? We can convince about any nonsense. But that matches reality, that's another thing. I mean, we have to practice in such a way that our conception and longings and prayers are actually matching reality, are actually corresponding with what's going on there. And we are not just creating our own science fiction movie in our head of what's Golok and how the things are going on there. That can happen also. Our anartas and gunas can start to filter our conception of the spiritual world. So that's important to be willing to clarify that by proper sangha and guidance and education. Okay, so I don't know, we
thank
have
you,
a few minutes, but I don't think there are any questions here. We are down here.
Well, I
don't know the ones connected live, if you have any questions. I have not received any yet.
Last time there was like a whole list that you didn't get to.
Yeah, but there was a list from last time, but I kind of replied. There were not that many. There were like two.
Okay.
And I kind of replied in the thread where they put the questions. So those questions are already somehow solved.
Okay,
yeah. I have a long list, but from the Buddhists of Spanish speaking. So that's for my Q&A in Spanish.
Right.
That I save for that.
How do you find that, Maharaj? I don't know how many devotees there are on that Spanish thread. Is it many more than on the North American or English? Actually, isn't just North America.
Yeah, in North America, it's like
it's all over the world, isn't it?
World.
So you're asking me...
I'm just wondering what... You know,
how many the proportions relative. Between Spanish-speaking and English-speaking that basically are
that you
following...
Take care of, yeah.
I've not made any calculation, but I would say that it's kind of...
Hundreds, maybe?
I don't know. I mean, what does it mean? Yeah, take care of? With social media, it's so impossible to know. Yeah, because so many people may be following or hearing lectures, but you don't have a clue they're doing that. And that time happened, as I told you so many times, that you met a devotee and they tell you, "Oh, Maharaj, so nice to meet you personally. Finally, I've heard the class for 5 years. They help." And I was like, "Who are you?" I mean, I'm happy to hear that, but I don't have a clue who you are.
Yeah.
And that's strange, because the other person kind of knows you for some time in some way, but I don't even know their name. So it creates this like unproportionate thing. But you're exposed to that. So in that sense, I cannot tell numbers.
Right.
But generally, there's like half and half Spanish-speaking, English-speaking audiences. Of course, more last years, more English-speaking have get to contact me. Before, it was mostly focused on Spanish-speaking audiences, and now a little bit more traveling. And anyhow, I personally try not to create like a division or a category like English. Of course, I have to do that when speaking,
right.
So I speak in the correct language. But besides that, it's like trying to, Vaishnav mandal, not like the circle of Vaishnavs, trying to serve them in whatever language it takes.
I was thinking how nice it would be if there was some kind of joint festival.
Uh-huh.
You know, even though the language wouldn't necessarily, but so much else would communicate.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Well, gradually it's happening. Now, recently we've been with Vaishnav Maharaj in North Carolina.
There
was some interaction in that connection. And in Costa Rica, in Maduan recently also, we have this festival where there were devotees from different parts, Europe, Latin America, United States. So, again, it's not happening immediately, but that will happen ultimately in Golok. But... But meanwhile, we are as much as we can. I feel sometimes it's not easy because living in so many different places and sometimes online we can see each other. But again, that's not the same as being in presence with those people. So I know that our Guru Maharaj, he likes to try to promote more and more this type of things. Not like his yearly visit to Madhuban and trying to invite devotees from different places to get together. And also part of that is get to know each other. That part of the festival, or now that he had his Vyasa Puja of Gaur Purnima celebration, North Carolina, also trying to, I think he will like to continue celebrating in that place, and maybe in time those type of events become like fixed things, so the devotees already know and organize in advance and can travel. And generally we try to also have this translation service ready, so whoever speaks some other language can go and not feel like, oh, I don't understand anything, basically, no? So takes time,
very
but
nice.
Work in progress.
Very nice. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you
much. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak in English, because I think we would be bereft without you.
Oh, thank you so much for you to allow me to speak in English. I need to practice also, so sorry I'm practicing with you, but next time in Spanish. Continue with your Duolingo.
That's nice.
Okay. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Srimad Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Sri Sri Brajan Haladarju ki jai, Nishrimha Bhagavan ki jai, Sri Tirupap Mahotsav Titi Abhiram Das Thakur ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Primananda.
Hari Hari Gaur.